Duras and Alkoff Tamari, a studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriana Contreras, our general manager, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Pruden, Dennis McCormick. Tomorrow on Democracy Now, we will look at the connection of domestic abuse and mass killings. On Thursday, Carol Anderson, the second, Race and Guns in a Fatally Unequal America. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by Kyle.
Yes, I'm over here.
How you doing?
On my Radio Shack mic. Is it coming in? Because I'm a little...
No, you're coming in fine.
Oh, that's good.
How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Feeling all right. A little bit of allergy stuff.
Yeah, but, it happens. It happens.
How was your weekend? Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, wait. Did I what? What'd you say? Did I have what?
Did you have a good... It was like a long weekend.
Hold on. Stop the theme.
Did you have a good...
Stop the theme. Nobody listens to me right here. No, I just want to make sure I understood you. Did I have a good weekend? Memorial Day weekend. You're asking me if I had a good weekend. A nice weekend. A happy weekend. A joyful weekend.
It's a simple question.
Let me explain to you something, Kyle, about what Memorial Day is about, okay? It's about people dying for you. Nobody else, just you. Supposed to feel bad.
Isn't that Easter?
It's not about... You know what? You're just like our vice president, Kamala Harris. Yeah, because when you don't like her, you mispronounce it. I've learned that. Kamala. That's what you say if you're a hater.
I think it's Madam Vice President, actually.
Kamala Harris. She had the gall, the audacity to wish people... What'd she say? What were the words? Have a nice long weekend. Enjoy
the long weekend.
Enjoy the long weekend. How dare you imply that people should be enjoying themselves on a 3-day weekend, 4 days for some people, and take advantage of sales and maybe go outside and do things for the first time in a year. Who does she think she is? Anyway? I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Who does she think she is, anyway? We're scripted. We know, we're scripted. No, it's just... It is so... I'm really trying. You know, part of my New Year's resolution was to try and see things from other perspectives. And I'm trying so hard to see things from other perspectives here. And okay, yeah, so what Kamala Harris said was so infuriating because she dared to wish people to have a nice long weekend. And here you're asking me if I had a nice week. It was a trigger, you know? Okay, so fine.
It was a micro trigger.
It was. Now, okay, just let's look back.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Well, you can. You can later after we pass judgment. The previous administration didn't do things like this, okay? No matter what you might think about them, they did not do things like this. I want to read you a couple of tweets from our former president, who shall remain unnamed. I hope everyone had a great Memorial Day, May 30th, 2016. Yeah, they were deleted, but I found them. I hope everyone had a great Memorial Day. Okay, yeah, so he's saying a great Memorial Day. Well, he's not calling it a long weekend, right? At least he's saying a great Memorial Day. Yeah. There's an insult when you call it a long weekend. Get back to me later. I'll figure out how. Here's another one from the same year. Have a great Memorial Day. And remember that we will soon make America great again. All caps. Because by turning it to you, instead of focusing on you know, the people who fought and died, that's, you know, you're acknowledging them, but you're also taking front stage. Yeah. And not using the word long weekend. All right, let's go back to 2015. I would like to wish everyone, including all haters and losers, of which sadly there are many, a truly happy and enjoyable Memorial Day. Isn't that a nice way of saying that? Isn't that better than wishing people a nice long weekend?
Well, aren't the losers adversaries? I mean, that seems a little counterintuitive to what all the soldiers fought for.
She used the word enjoy. Enjoy the long weekend.
Doesn't Coca-Cola use that?
Yeah, but they're not wishing you Memorial Day greetings, are they? No.
I don't know.
They just want you to buy their product. No, she said enjoy the long weekend. All right, and he said, I'd like to wish everyone, including all haters and losers, of which sadly there are many, a truly happy and enjoyable Memorial. Okay, yeah, I guess that word is similar. Okay, fine. But it's the way he said it is different. He said it as a white guy, okay?
Yeah, there. It did sound whiter.
Yeah, it's whiter.
Yeah.
And, you know, some positivity. I like people who weren't captured. Huh? That's a very positive statement. I like people who weren't captured. He said that to John McCain.
Yeah, that's too far.
Well,
and I'm not a big John McCain. I mean,
but let's
know,
go.
Fan.
Let's look. Let's look at, you know, your model here, Kyle. Kamala.
Wait, whoa.
Let's look at the thing she said in the past. No, because she's got a history. All right, this isn't a one-off. All right, this is from last year.
She represents a lot more than just me.
This is from last year, May 25th. Today we honor the heroes who made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation and our freedom. While our Memorial Day commemorations may be different today than in years past, we must never forget their devotion to putting country over self. What's she trying to get away with there? What's she trying to pull? There's a hidden message in there.
Country over self. That sounds like socialism.
It does, doesn't it? Country over self. Okay, so that's socialism right there.
I mean, you could say party. But
our Memorial Day commemorations may be different today than in years past. What does that mean? She said this last spring. What was different last spring than in previous years? There was nothing different last year. It was pretty much the same as any other year. What is she trying to? She's trying to pull the wool over our eyes. We're not going to fall for it, Kamala. No, we're not. Moving on, 2017. Let's go back a few years. May their sacrifice for our nation's values never be forgotten. Hashtag Memorial Day. How dare you, Kamala? When you're really angry, you pronounce the third syllable. Hashtagging Memorial Day on Twitter? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? The ultimate disrespect. Oh my God. She did it again in 2018. A year later, she didn't learn anything. Hashtag Memorial Day is a time to honor those who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. We owe a profound debt to all who have fought for our safety and our freedom. Well, I got news for you. Hashtag Memorial Day is not a holiday at all. And it's two words. So take your Twitter speak somewhere else. Take it off of Twitter. It doesn't belong there. All right, 2019. As we spend time with family and friends, she did it again. Hashtag Memorial Day. Let's remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice so our nation can be safe and free. We are forever in their debt. Oh, I get it now. Rack up the national debt. Yeah. Start early. Start in 2019. So how much do we owe to this hashtag Memorial Day, huh? You just keep on with the spending and the trillions of dollars. Oh, my God. You know, the whole country is going to be basically owned by Mongolians. Yeah. I'm not sure who's lending us money lately, but I'm pretty sure they're on the list.
Yeah, big yurt.
Here's one time where she didn't hashtag the holiday. This was back in 2020. Memorial Day can be particularly tough for some veterans. If you or a veteran you know are struggling, help us here. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Or text to 838-255, Veterans Crisis Line, Suicide Prevention Hotline, chat and text. Anything else that you want veterans to do for you, Kamala? Huh? You give them homework here? They have to call a number? They have to text? Why can't you leave them alone? Why are you haranguing them like this? Oh, my God. You know, the list just goes, let's go back to 2015. Hashtag Memorial Day, because she was doing this for a while. She's been hashtagging our most precious holidays for a long time. Hashtag Memorial Day is a time to honor those who have served and sacrificed for our nation. She couldn't spell out the word and. She had to use the and sign. We owe a profound debt to all who have fought for us. Using the same language over and over again and racking up the national debt. Okay, so let's look at this year. Okay, this year. What did she say this year? In addition to encouraging people to enjoy the long weekend, she said, throughout our history, our servicemen and women have risked everything to defend our freedoms and our country. As we prepare to honor them on Memorial Day, we remember their service and their sacrifice. Wow. I mean, if you can't read between the lines there's nothing I can say. And then she tweeted again. I mean, how many times are you going to tweet about Memorial Day, for God's sake? This is out of control. You know, people have to read these things. Maybe people don't want to remember it's Memorial Day. You ever think of that? We honor those members of our military who sacrificed their lives in order to defend our freedoms. We owe these heroes and their loved ones everything. Not just on Memorial Day. Every day. Words defy me here. How disrespectful can you possibly get, this vice president of ours? Do you have anything to say, Kyle? I mean, maybe you don't want to wish me
really
wish
quick.
That I had a nice weekend again.
I just want to take your
My temperature. Go ahead. All right. What is it? Is it going down?
Yeah, it is. It's actually a little low. How are you feeling? You feeling like a little faint?
Wait, is this another disrespectful slogan you're gonna throw my way?
Well, no.
Because asking how I'm feeling is in any way denigrating our veterans.
No, we have a sheet here, a new program we're doing, and it seems you have a loggable episode. Yes, it was a loggable on-air episode, and I just need to write
it. Loggable? Do we log that here?
What time is it?
Does somebody at the station have to log
it? I fax it to the station manager.
We have a fax machine at the station? How come no one ever told me the number?
That's what they told me.
Huh. Wow, yeah, okay.
Episode happened at...
No, I think we have to go down the hall and use the... Okay.
And yes.
Can we resume the theme?
Condemning Vice President.
Oh, no, we cut it off. We shouldn't.
On air.
We're not supposed to cut it off. We're supposed to play the whole thing.
First violation.
Thank you. Okay. Well, okay, let's just forget you said that for now. How are you? I think I asked you that already, but you kind of deferred.
Oh, me. Well, I enjoyed the long weekend. It was really,
oh, you
really
bastard. Oh my
it
god.
Was so
I cannot
nice.
Believe you enjoyed the weekend. How dare you?
I'm sorry.
Wow.
But it was rainy. I like
wasn't
wet,
that great?
Rainy,
it rained every day.
Stormy.
Every day of the weekend it rained. I mean, I don't like getting people when they're down, but everybody was out and happy to be out. And here was a holiday weekend, finally, and it rained the whole time. But, you know, I don't think it affected people very much. I think they were still happy to be out, even if they got a little wet.
No, a solid 48 degrees and chill to the bone. I wouldn't give to be in a horrible, leaking tent somewhere.
Well,
or I don't know.
I can do better because our heat went on. And I was in a room where the air conditioner and the heat were on at the same time. And I just thought to myself, wow, this is unusual.
Yeah, it was bizarre. All the preparations for one season were kind of irrelevant as we step back to another season.
I should have turned one of them off, shouldn't I? I just realized that now. It probably would have been the responsible thing to do. But I was marveling at it.
Yeah. Run the dehumidifier out in a rainstorm. It's always the smart thing to do.
Forgot to turn that on.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of getting through that, and boy, I don't know what else. What else is going on? I have been out a little more around.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Yeah, neighbors have been complaining about that.
As much as I can to make them uncomfortable, mm-hmm. As anyone would want in their community. You know, freaking out the neighbors is that's how we get along. So, no, I just like. You know, went to a couple establishments more than we had been, and I like when it is nice out. It is it's great to see people enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I actually
with their faces
I,
out. Their faces
I,
are out now because you know
yeah.
wearing a mask outside. You don't need to do that.
I still really like that people have the option, mm-hmm. and there's really no judgment. You really don't know what people's status or what they're going through. They may have some. Immunocompromised. You know, who cares? Like, people just doing what they do. And, you know, if you're in close quarters and stuff, that's obvious. And of course, you know, having normal conversation, like, conversations without thinking about your proximity to people is, it makes for, like, you know, an enjoyable time mm-hmm. when you're sitting around having a drink or, you know, chatting with old friends. I got a hug from someone this weekend.
Yeah.
I did too. It was cool. I wasn't expecting it, and I let it in. It was kind of a a milestone.
Well, you know, we're all vaccinated, you know, and it's got to mean something. And yeah, I got to say, I don't celebrate death tolls often, but the death toll in New York is in the single digits now on a daily basis. Single digits. I remember when it was in the triple digits not that long ago, and really high up. I mean, it was a nightmare what we went through over the past year. So seeing that happen.
Yeah, I think we're March 2020 levels now.
Yeah, but March 2020 was before anything hit the fan. So it's not like it's the same time a year or anything like that. It's because of what we have been doing, both in taking precautions, you know, the social distancing and the masks, but mostly the vaccine. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of getting the vaccine. It is so important. It's obviously working. Look, if you don't believe there was a virus, there's nothing I can say to you. But there was, and we lost close to 1 million people in this country, maybe more, because numbers are notoriously badly reported. And that happens everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter what political party or what country you're part of. The numbers always are wrong somehow. The response is never enough.
Well, the surveillance was totally mishandled and not even in place at the outset for this whole thing. There was not a consistent visibility on how this thing spread. And, you know, the Origins report about it is that was in the news a lot in the last week. It was just nonstop about China and its, you know, and smears all the way around and kind of speculation. The truth is that doesn't really matter when you're talking about the effect because we reacted and had to adjust regardless of the origin. And I think that there's still time. I think they extended another 90 days. And
extended what 90 days?
Getting a final report, I think the UN report or something.
Okay.
About the origins of the coronavirus. Well,
why is there a deadline on it? I mean,
I don't know. I think that
you can get the report any time. I mean,
I think the extension, the 90 days might have been something that Biden called for. In any event, we don't have anything definitive. Look, and that speculation I find really useless to people getting the vaccine and being healthy.
The only thing I want to see happen in 90 days is for everybody to get a damn vaccine and for it to stop spreading so we can go back to our normal lives. As far as investigating, I'm all for investigating it, but let's focus on what's important right now, and which is stopping it. And we do that, and then we can spend all the time we want investigating, and I'm 100% for that. It puzzles me, you know, like people want answers, but why don't they want answers when it's politically inconvenient? And I'm referring, of course, to January 6th. What the Senate did last week? Oh, my God, how shameful is that? You know, investigating an insurrection, a violent insurrection on the Capitol building, the same Capitol building your fat asses are sitting in right now, and you don't want to have an investigation, not even a partisan investigation, a bipartisan, same amount of people from each party, and you kill that? I mean, look, we're going to find out what happened. We're going to investigate. And you're going to look pretty guilty for not wanting us to investigate. But you can't stop the facts from getting out. And that goes for COVID. That goes for January 6th. That goes for any investigation. But it's so sobering to see something like that happen. And just to feel helpless, you know? I don't like this helpless feeling that we always seem to feel. And I've been railing about this all week long, where we get to a point where, okay, we can make change. Like, for instance, what the Democrats did in Texas, they walked out right when a bill was about to be sent to the governor's office that would restrict voting tremendously for people of color, for people who are disadvantaged. Yeah, it makes it easy for those, you know, those people who are have no trouble getting around, who have, you know, good incomes and that kind of thing. But for poor people, it made it so much more difficult. So what they did was they walked out. They couldn't reach quorum. And because they couldn't reach quorum, they were not able to vote. And they had a midnight deadline for some reason, and it passed. But it's only a temporary solution because Democrats never seem to be able to win for good. And the governor is first, he's going to suspend the pay of all Democrats. That's great. And then he's going to call a special session where they all have to attend, and they're gonna force it through, despite the fact that people don't want this. Now, again, yeah, taking a stand but losing in the end. We have to do something on a national level, and that is what I'm hoping happens. But again, you know, we're faced with a Senate, you know, with an obstructionist in West Virginia who will stand in the way of everything for some reason, and there doesn't seem to be a plan to deal with that. So we just have to keep being frustrated and saying, we have to stop the filibuster. If only we could do this. Oh, my God, 2022 is coming, and we might not have accomplished anything. We might even lose. And it just seems like a lot of hand-wringing and not enough planning. I'm hoping that there's planning going on that I just don't know about. But, boy, we need some victories. We need some changes.
Yeah, I think the behavior and lack of bipartisanship and willingness to work something out and stubbornness is actually going to force the filibuster issue. Those three topics you raised, the January 6th commission, that disgrace that happened last week, the voting rights bill, like John Lewis Voting Rights Act and
infrastructure
and that kind of stuff. And absolutely, that was the third. I almost forgot, but I was trying to remember them as you were finishing up. But the infrastructure bill and all that it encompasses, however you define infrastructure, those three things are forcing this filibuster. And it's in large part because of the lack of cooperation or just feeling that obstruction is going to be what the future holds.
Here's what I don't understand. People are blaming Biden. They're demonstrating outside Chuck Schumer's house, but they're not going after Manchin, the guy who is doing it. You know, they blame everybody else, but they don't blame the person responsible. This is like what progressives do. They target those closest to them, and they don't actually focus on the real problem.
I think the targeting needs to transform to support them placing pressure, due pressure on people like Joe Manchin.
Well, I'll tell you this.
It's misappropriate, or it's not done exactly.
If there were even 1,000 people surrounding his house or his office 24/7,
it's not about,
that would make a difference.
Right, right. But
why doesn't this ever happen? Look at other countries. That's how they do things. That's how change is made.
If Democrats have support from the constituents instead of being surrounded by them, to surround someone like Joe Manchin politically, you might have an effect, because they can speak to the kinds of things that would help his district that he's speaking to, and negotiate, do the politicking that needs to be done.
That's why I feel good that Biden's in the White House, because he knows how to negotiate. He's had such a history. I just hope he does it.
What do his districts, what do his constituents, what are they really saying? What does he need to come to an agreement, to be on board? What will it take?
Right, right. But also, flip side of that, what's going to happen to you if you continue to screw up the plans? Like, maybe you don't get any of the infrastructure money for West Virginia. You know, maybe that's what has to be done. Maybe there needs to be some discipline here, because, hey, the Republicans are really good at this. The whole Kamala Harris thing earlier, my God, did you notice how all the Republicans took that up? The most ridiculous thing to get upset about, yet everybody was saying the same thing, saying how she's insulting the veterans, and they basically will just take anything and run with it, and they all run with it the same way, you know. So they read from a script. I'm not saying Democrats have to be like Republicans, but there are certain things they can take from the playbook that seem to be effective, and they need to start implementing those. And not the least of which is winning those local elections, getting control back in the legislative arena, because, my God, it doesn't matter who you have in the White House if they're just going to keep passing these horrible laws in all the states and just roll over everybody.
Sure. And one form that can take is people reminding those in districts like Joe Manchin's that there's a cost to being not playing ball and not
exactly
not really advocating for the best interests of your district and playing political games.
I guess that's the question. What is the cost? What cost will Joe Manchin have to pay for this?
Well,
if it doesn't work, there has to be something. And I haven't seen anything. I just hope it's behind the scenes that they are working on this, because if they go through the next election cycle without accomplishing these things, a lot of people are going to be disillusioned, turned off, and they will not vote for them again.
If what he says is really honest, like his constituents don't want such and such, or he has to listen to that, they could just as easily be telling him, look, we want things to get fixed.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, this is part of that. And you're not doing the right thing here, but that's up to that. I don't know. I mean, we can look at the locality, look at the specifics at play there, and remind folks how much his input on this matters and is holding up things, but whatever the issue is. But
I think West Virginia, there are enough progressives there to be able to raise their voices and be heard. And we need to see more of that. You know, it has to get through to him somehow.
Yeah, it comes local, but also in the peers in office.
I would even say I respect what he's trying to do, which is, you know, reach an agreement with the other side. But at some point, you have to realize they're not interested in working with you.
They're maniacal.
Yeah. But I guess he doesn't want to start off that way, even though he's been witness to this for quite a number of years. At some point, you have to say, okay, I tried, you know? And give him credit for trying, but for God's sake, we have to move forward. This country will be transformed in a very positive way if we're able to move ahead with these programs, with the infrastructure. I mean, my God, we'll have decent rail.
And
we'll have roads and bridges that are fixed.
And these hang-ups will look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. They will. History will not judge them well, that's for damn sure. Meanwhile, Trump is telling people he thinks he'll be reinstated as president in August. How is this crap still going on?
Yeah, it's not going away. It's out there. There's some hardcore just craziness in so far as perpetuating yet more irrational lies.
Yeah, I don't even want to give this any more attention than it's already been given.
Forget it's going on though, because they're manipulating people into hysteria, thinking things that are absolutely not true have gone on or are going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous, ludicrous. I cannot say enough that we need to at least be watching and listening to the kinds of conversations that are happening and aware that this stuff is, it's toxic, and we have not fully realized the depths of damage it has caused the electorate and, you know, your neighbors, people all around. I think a lot of people have seen the ills of and the root causes and looked deeply into this, mm-hmm. but a lot of people haven't.
Yeah. And I don't know if they ever will. At some point you have to say, okay, you know, you don't believe in election integrity, despite the fact that it's been proven over and over again. We will never satisfy you, because no matter how many recounts or professionals who come and tell you if your election was secure or not, you will always claim there's some kind of a conspiracy and that only your people can get it right. Same thing with vaccine deniers and all kinds of other conspiracy people out there. You can have the conversation to a degree, but at some point you have to move on. You have to say, okay, the facts have been established. And in most cases, that will not be accepted, and you can't confuse that with the debate still ongoing. No, it's basically you're in quicksand and you need to get out of it and move ahead. Otherwise, you're never going to get any place. So with the election, you know, if these people can't get over the election, just stay away. Stay away. You are the enemy of our state at this point. And to even have someone like that in any position of power is detrimental to this country. It's a shame that so many people don't agree with that, but the evidence is really piling up that they do not have our best interest at heart.
The former president still needs to concede.
He never will.
He will. He
You think he will?
I mean, I'm sorry. He must. And
yeah, but he won't.
He will not in the form of this kind of press release and stunt. Insofar as there's a following or something. As far as people want to feed that lie, but I absolutely feel he must concede that is what happened in the last.
But Kyle, that's never going to happen. He's never going to look at the personality involved here. He's never going to do that. And as far as you know, who's fueling whom? It's a chicken and egg like thing you got going here. Is it the people? Or is it Trump? I'm pretty sure Trump is the one fueling the people.
But that's the failure in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
He is not respecting the institution.
He never did.
Not conceding.
But he never did.
That's right. And so all of this peripheral mm-hmm. support and specious righteousness around his lie would be moot if he did. But he, as you said, refuses to. And that's dangerous. We saw it on January 6th. And all the more reason to not consider it something that has been cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, the situation's not changing. So I think you know, we need to change as far as how much of this we're going to take and how long we're going to remain stymied and not getting things accomplished.
It's toxic, so get your hazmat suits.
Mm-hmm. Here's some good news, though. I just want to have a little bit of good news, and we're going to move on to our feature in a second. But remember, we were wringing our hands a few months ago before Biden got in about the oil and gas leases in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge that Trump was pushing, and basically was pushing it up until the last days of his administration. Well, guess what? Today, the Biden administration suspended those leases. So they had the power to do that. I don't know why when everybody was freaking out about this, we were convinced that once Trump does this, it's over. No, it's not. Biden suspended it. He can do things like that. And it's good to see him actually exercising these powers. Reversed a drilling program approved by the Trump administration and revived a political fight over a remote region that is home to polar bears and other wildlife and a rich reserve of oil, which we no longer need. We have renewable energy. Let's focus on that. Plenty of jobs, plenty of opportunities there. We don't need to pollute the planet anymore.
And bicycles.
Mm-hmm. The Interior Department order follows a temporary moratorium on oil and gas lease activities imposed by Biden on his first day in office. His January 20th executive order suggested a new environmental review was needed to address possible legal flaws in a drilling program approved by Trump under a 2017 law enacted by Congress way back at the beginning.
Flaws? Oh, that's a shock.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying it. After conducting a required review, Interior, which is how you say the Department of the Interior, Interior said it identified defects in the underlying record of decisions supporting the leases, including the lack of analysis of a reasonable range of alternatives required under the National Environmental Protection or Policy Act, which is a bedrock environmental law. It's a very nice way of saying, hey, you didn't do anything. You're just trying to mess up the environment. We're not going to let you get away with it. The remote 19.6 million acre refuge is home to polar bears, caribou, snowy owls, and other wildlife, including migrating birds from six continents, Republicans, and the... Oh, no, Republicans aren't up there. No. Migrating birds from six continents, period. Sorry. Republicans and the oil industry, who also will not be living there, have long been trying to open up the oil-rich refuge, which is considered sacred by the indigenous Gwich'in. For drilling. Democrats, environmental groups, and some Alaska Native tribes have been trying to block it. I imagine all Alaska Native tribes are trying to block it. So this is good. This is good news, and it's just proof that, yeah, Democrats can do things. They can get things done. They just have to put their foot down. This has been a good week. The Democrats in Texas did something. Biden's doing things. Maybe we'll get through to Manchin. Maybe we'll actually see some progress on infrastructure this week. And we can actually start moving in a positive direction for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, keep the pressure has to stay in place to keep focus and not get distracted by a lot of superfluous stuff. But that is something to look forward to. And it, those communities up there, yeah, they should be breathing a sigh of relief, because that kind of destruction, it's not the same as an urban environment or a suburban being like subdivided and turned into something else. You can't replace certain waterways, certain temperate zones and land interfaces. That's vital for those habitats and the practices of the hunting and traditions. It's so important, and we can't just look at land and say like, oh, this is simply a place where we can do more resource extraction.
Yeah, and look at what you're talking about here. You're ruining the land, and then you're burning the oil, ruining the air. You know, it's a 1-2 punch. We can do so much better. The technology is here. The technology is developing. It's growing. So much opportunity. Why are people against? Well, first of all, most people aren't against it, but why are these corporations against it? Well, come on, figure it out. They're corporations. This is how they make their money. This particular bit of industry, just like coal, it's something that has passed its time, and we as a human race have to move on to something that doesn't hurt us as much and something that is at least as efficient.
And it starts with these steps, these concrete steps to pivot and go in a different direction federally.
Oh, the projector is on. The piano is playing. And it means that we have arrived at another episode of Films of the Year That Was. This is the never-ending journey that Kyle and I are apparently taking through the Academy Awards, where we see an Academy Award winning film.
I just want to point out, we've noticed that certain networks are starting to follow along.
Well, let me finish the intro to the thing first. Yeah, but we watch an award winning film each week, two sometimes, because there's a domestic one and there's a foreign one. And yes, as Kyle said, we have noticed that at least last, the film that we saw last week was, what was it again? The domestic
American
film?
American Beauty?
No, the film we just saw. The one we're talking about tonight.
Oh, Gladiator.
Gladiator. That was on TV on Sunday.
Yeah, the Sunday night movie on CBS.
After we had already gotten the Blu-ray and saw it ourselves.
We already saw it.
But yeah. You know what? The version they showed on network TV probably would have been chopped to ribbons and had commercials in it. So, but
still,
it's weird to see.
Yeah, before that we'd seen some other like little references to some of the films we've been watching. This is the first time we actually had just finished, and then there it is.
There it is, right there.
Movie night.
Right there.
Of course, on a holiday weekend. Yes, uh-huh. So Gladiator was for the year 2000.
I was not thrilled to see that.
Oh, come on.
Look, we just saw Braveheart, for God's sake.
Ridley
it's basically
Scott.
The same damn film.
Ridley Scott directed it.
Uh-huh. Great for him, but...
Yeah, and it is...
He directed Blade Runner, by the way. Why didn't that win Best Film?
Charming film taking place in AD 180, a good year.
An alien film. He didn't win for those either.
And Maximus Decimus Meridius...
Whoop-de-doo.
Aims to return home after a victory against Germanic tribes.
A lot of swords, a lot of grunting and people bleeding.
The emperor tells our protagonist Maximus that his son's unfit to rule.
The old emperor. Richard,
the son actually
Richard
murders
Harris.
The emperor.
Richard Harris, the old emperor, said that.
Yeah, Aurelius. Yes, and Marcus Aurelius, and his son Commodus then murders him, declares himself the emperor, and forces Maximus, this fighter who basically just wants to retire, forces him to like kind of bend the knee, kiss the ring, all that.
But he doesn't. He doesn't kiss the ring. He doesn't do any of that.
No, he walks out. Yeah. And he's sold in as to a gladiator trainer named Proximo. And starts fighting. He does a bunch of fights, and he ends up winning. And a lot of them are themed. And he kind of, the first one he does, it goes opposite the way the battle actually ended.
Who do you see? Who is it that plays Proximus? Do you have that info?
Oh sure, yeah. I
interesting story.
I've actually memorized all of the characters in the film.
Well, then you could just tell me the name.
It's right. On the tip of my tongue.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Just, keep
it's,
thinking.
It's pronouncing it.
Maybe rustling that paper around will help you remember.
It's not Joaquin Phoenix.
No,
it's not Russell Crowe, Australia in the building.
No.
Yeah.
Proctor is like the fourth character, fifth character. He can't be that far down.
I didn't highlight. Do you have any?
Okay. Well, anyway, the actor who played. Let me tell the story, and you could interject with the actor's name when you find it. He basically died during production.
Oliver Reed.
Thank you, Oliver Reed. So he died during production in the middle of it because this guy would not stop drinking. In fact, read the summation of his last night where he had like I think 8 beers and like 15 mixed drinks. Basically, he was trying to drink people under the table. He had a heart attack, and that was the end of him. So they had to digitally insert him into a number of scenes because he hadn't finished doing all his scenes yet. And in fact, his last line, I think, was a recycled last line from earlier in the film because he couldn't read the new line. And he was the character that was supposed to bury those little figurines in the earth.
Well,
at the end.
Juba took care of that.
Yeah, the other gladiator did that, but he wasn't supposed to do that.
He's one of two gladiators mm-hmm. that he befriended in his challenging and so forth. Anyway, Commodus basically challenges him and loses, and Maximus dies.
Well, they both
died.
They both died.
Right, they both, he loses and dies, and Commodus is already sort of dead because Maximus got him, but...
With the same knife that Commodus stabbed him with in secret before their match so that he'd gain the advantage.
It's really, that Oliver Reed story, that's awful.
Isn't that awful?
You gotta have more blood than ethanol in your fluids there.
Yeah, that's something to learn while filming a gladiator movie.
Yeah, gosh. Oh. Anyway, so this movie was gory. Like crazy gory and senseless, and I want to contrast that with the international film.
Are we done with this? Well, basically,
I'm done with it.
If I could just say, it was an interesting story. You know, it's all about corruption in Rome and how this guy was noble. He just wanted to go back to his family and be a farmer, and he lost his family because he wouldn't bend the knee, and basically wound up being this kind of weird because when he got home and found his wife and kid murdered, he just kind of collapsed. And then he was found by a slave trader and taken into service where he becomes a gladiator. So that all happened by complete chance that he happened to wind up being put into service, which basically is a death sentence for most people. When you fight in Colosseums, people are dying constantly, and that was a form of great entertainment then. But he was so good that he wound up right back in Rome and fighting under the eye of the emperor. And then eventually, when the emperor found out who he was, the same guy that he thought he had killed, he winds up fighting him one-on-one in the Colosseum. And by that time, the emperor wasn't that popular, so people were kind of cheering for Maximus.
Well, the emperor got fixated on this thing.
Yeah.
It was his undoing.
Yeah.
But he was masked on the first fight.
They both met their end. Oh, yeah. So that's
but
that.
There was a fair amount of computer-generated stuff.
Mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
Colosseum, I'm sure, was 3D. You're kind of seeing the Titanic evolution of, like, let's make something real with the computers and then put actors around it. Here we are, it's like, okay, let's do the Colosseum and we'll have a real fighters and real lions, you know, whatever. Or maybe they were CG.
They were tigers.
Tigers, I'm sorry.
Sometimes they were lions, but in this case they were tigers.
No, you're right. They were striped.
Yep.
But the Colosseum itself was recreated in some of the wide shots and stuff. So you're seeing this kind of one-upping, like, okay, let's go further back than mm-hmm. than the Titanic. Let's do Rome. Here we are, of course, Gladiator. Now, I want to say the International itself was also period, but even further. Even further back.
No, you got it backwards. The film in ancient Rome was in about 180 AD.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
And this film is in the 18th century. So what is this film?
You're right. 19th century Qing Dynasty China. We have Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Which I was upset about because I saw that film lost to Gladiator, and I really wanted to see this film, but then it turns out it won the International, so we wound up seeing it anyway. And you know what? It's more swords. It's more fighting people to the death and all that kind of thing, except they're speaking Chinese.
Well, I would say the main character of the film, Green Destiny, is in fact a sword.
It is a sword, yes.
That's right.
I'm getting kind of sick of swords. I really am. I'm sorted out.
You got sorted out on this one, but we sorted out the film, and it was great. I really, really liked this film. It was, I will take up the rest of the show talking about it, but it is a Chinese production and
Taiwanese, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that also, Chinese is the right way to say it, but apparently it came from Taiwan,
there were like,
not from the mainland.
There were 8 film companies behind it, including China Film Co-Production.
But that could be a Taiwanese company. Do you see anything in Beijing or in Shanghai?
All right, I know Netflix didn't do it.
Well, no, they didn't do it, but I think it was the director was Taiwanese.
All right, fine. Okay, Li Mu Bai, the main fighter who owned the sword, was played by Chow Yun Fat.
Yeah,
where's he? But he also.
He's Taiwanese, I'm pretty
produced?
Sure.
Produced?
And the funny thing about him, he speaks Cantonese normally. And people who watched this in Chinese were very upset at the accents, because apparently one person had a Malaysian accent, one person had a Cantonese accent.
Yes.
And it was very hard to follow. We had an easy time following with subtitles, but people who speak the language it's in had some difficulty.
I'm sorry. He was just the actor. But anyway, the story itself... has some complexities, but it's very beautiful. There's some cyclical nature to it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could go through the plot, but there were the things like when I first saw this, I did not see it. I saw it dubbed, so I did not see it with subtitles and stuff. So that's partly why I fell back in love with this watching it again for our project this time. And got more out of it. I got the story a lot better. I got
cool.
At the time when it came out, it was very much new in the three-dimensional stuff. The characters fly in this film,
what's up with that?
There's a lot of fantastic.
They can just fly.
Elements.
People can fly. It's that's neat. But
I believe some of that is the authenticity, like sticking with the book it was based on, and those things just become a part of the storytelling, and it's very beautifully done. And at the time, the fight scenes and stuff were a lot of what, as a young person, I was, you know, maybe into it for. I got more out of it on the story side, and I feel that the fighting was a lot more subtle. There's much less gore than Gladiator. Of course, Gladiator's, I don't know how you could compare them. And even a lot of the derivative stuff that I think came from this, like Kill Bill and even in The Matrix, there's different fighting. It's using similar technologies and stuff, but I find a lot of stuff was drawn from this film.
Well, an interesting thing. Yes, Kill Bill definitely are borrowed from this pretty heavily. I think that was acknowledged. But The Matrix, same choreographer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if those fight scenes look similar, that's why.
That's why. Okay. Yeah.
And it came out about the same time, too.
There was a lot of excitement around that kind of filmmaking and the different techniques at play. Dude, just wanted to mention that. But the plot itself, I don't know if we have time to get into it much more, but it is basically someone who... it's a love story. A love story on of multiple types, dynamics and combinations of characters. But this swordsman ends up with a friend working for a security company and giving up his sword from his fighting days and returns it to their benefactor. And he agrees to kind of keep it for him as he's moving on in life, sort of retiring and such. And there's this bratty... young daughter Jen, Jen, and she's actually sort of being set to be married.
It's funny how Jen can be a Chinese name, but also an American name,
right?
And it's
right.
Basically the same character.
And she's actually seeking adventure and stuff. And so the private security people find that the sword that was returned comes up missing.
This is I had a problem with this because you see the sword being stolen by this mysterious person, and everyone is saying, who is he? Who is he? And I could tell by the eyes, I was a female, and I knew right away it was her.
Of course.
But the big reveal took another 20 minutes.
But that's the point of it is that even though our sort of clinical, maybe Western viewing eyes may want more clever disguising, that's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point
No, I agree.
I mean, even in a like Shakespearean sense, there's plenty of things that are like, oh, that is a character playing this person.
I don't think the plot was a strong point here. I think the filming was the strong point.
I think the
choreography was a strong point.
Brilliant long shots, lots of incredible action scenes, uh-huh. and so forth. But
I did get sick of the swords, though. I'm just sick of swords. I'm sorry. It's just too many damn swords.
Sure, sure. So, anyway, the investigation plays out, and I just want to acknowledge the actress. Michelle Yao plays the love interest of Li Mubai, and her character is Yu Shu Lian, and she's wonderful because she is so in tune, investigates Jen without letting on, and very sincere about her duty to investigate but not disrupt. And I just find her her wisdom and guidance and steering is just so incredible, and I really love her performance in this as well.
Agreed.
Anyway, I wish I had more time to go into it.
That's 1999. No, actually, I'm sorry, that's 2000. Yeah, we're in the 2000s now, so
that's
we're
right.
done with 2000. Wow. Well, look forward to the next chapter in this saga.
Oh, and the lighting, the eyes.
You can't talk about it anymore. We're done. Hey, before we leave, I feel it's important to bring up this story. For a second straight year, the Stony Brook baseball team season ended due to reasons beyond its control. The Stony Brook Seawolves championship round game against NJIT, which had been suspended due to rain in the bottom of the third inning on Saturday. Stony Brook was ahead 1-0. The bases were loaded. The game got canceled because of the rain. And get this, the team they were playing, that they were beating, they were given the championship because they had been unbeaten thus far in the America East Championship. So they get the conference's automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. What kind of system is that? The America East Conference, NCAA, guys, what are you doing? They were winning. Our team was ahead. And what, you're on deadline or something? You know, rain delays. Delay means delay. It doesn't mean rain cancel. You can't win by rain. And yet, our team was denied because it rained.
Rain is a sport, E. You need to come to terms with this.
I'm sorry. This is what I think of America East and NCAA. You have so much wrong with you. But this, right here, where a team is winning, playing for the championship, and you just deny it to them, especially the second year in a row or something like this happens. Last year it was COVID. It's shameful. It's shameful. You need to make this right. All right. We are out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back in one form or another next week. We will see you then.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Stay tuned for Finn. Coming up next.
Chance to win. Leaves start falling, come down is calling, loneliness starts sinking in. But I'm one, I'm one, and I can see that this is me, and I will be. I'll see I'm the one. Where do you get those blue jeans? Faded, patched secrets so tight. Where do you get that walk oh so lean? It's all just right. got a Gibson without a case, but I can't get that even tanned look on my face. Ill-fitting clothes and I blend in the crowd. Fingers so clumsy, voice too loud, but I'm worried.